7.
Major funding for the connection is provided by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon, in for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection. The recession conundrum. Are we in or are we out? The answer matters a lot to politicians holding econ conferences in Texas, to big business deciding whether to build up inventories or lay off workers, to investors worrying over their bankrolls, their retirements. Information dictates behavior, but in a key part of the economy, there seems to be a disconnect between the almost universal bad tidings and the question, what to do now? Consumer spending. We just can't stop. Nothing, not terrorist attacks, tumbling stock prices, layoffs, accounting scandals, nor high-profile bankruptcies have compelled the economy at the mall, at the auto dealership. And thank God, because word is that spending, spending, spending is the only thing keeping it all afloat. But at what cost? Connection listeners, the message from Wall Street and Waco is that we're all in this together. What do you think is a healthy consumer posture when everyone's looking up, wondering if the sky really is falling? Are you still spending? And if so, why? Join us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Or you can join us online at theconnection.org. My guests in this hour are Alfred Kahn, Professor of Political Economy Emeritus at Cornell University, and Michael Cannell, National Economics Reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Michael, we're going to get into some of these larger questions just up ahead, but first, let's go over today's headlines a wee bit, because a lot has been happening. We had the economic conference, I guess we could call it, yesterday, that the Bush administration invited people to in Waco. We also have consumer spending figures and the Fed's decision not to cut rates right now. Would you sort this all out for us? Because really what I'm thinking about most is how this all plays out so I can go out and buy that sofa I've been thinking about.
Well, if you do, you'll help make Alan Greenspan happy and probably probably help make the president happy as well. It's hard to sort it out for the experts. Everyone's kind of pointing in a different direction, and that's partly because the numbers are pointing in various directions. And the gist of the numbers is that there's still some kind of an expansion going on. It's a pretty lame expansion, as post-recession expansions go. And for people who are looking for a job, it looks an awful lot like a recession because the economy isn't producing jobs.
I know that some economists and writers have argued that we've really never left the recessionary mode.
Well, the formal designation of a recession has to come from a group called the National Bureau of Economic Research, and it kind of comes from looking in the rearview mirror. And I think in 90 and 91, it wasn't until more than a year after we'd left the recession that they announced that we had actually left it. So they can't give you a precise answer to the question, but I suppose what matters for consumers most is how you feel and what your job situation is and your financial situation. And in a parallel sense, that's what matters to businesses as well.
We refer to it at the beginning of the hour as the Tinkerbell economy, meaning if you believe and, you know, take out your wallet, the sky won't come crashing down. I think I've mixed up my fairy tales here a little bit, but but still.
You've got the right mode, anyway.
Yeah, unreality. But can you answer why people keep on spending at the rate that we all do when we know that there's so many trouble spots out there?
Well, I think the conventional wisdom is that the personal incomes of Americans have continued to rise, albeit a little more slowly in the last 6 months or so. And so people simply have a fairly solid base on which to keep spending. And if you're one of the folks who still have a job, and if your job is continuing to pay you regularly and slightly more than a year ago, there's no particular reason why you would stop spending. And I think implicit in that is the psychological analysis of Americans, that we are a people that spends. We're not a people that saves. And economists have talked for decades. Actually, in the 80s, they were talking about how we had become a nation of spenders and how we really ought to emulate the Japanese and start saving. And if we started saving anything like the Japanese right now, the economy would go into the gutter.
Mm-hmm. And we might have a sort of Japanese-style economic concern, but we'll deal with that a little bit later in this hour. Let's bring in an economist, Professor Alfred Kahn. Before we get to the question of consumer confidence, Professor Kahn, I'd like you to revisit the issue of a piece of fruit, the banana, for which I think you made more famous than anyone since Mae West. Could you tell us that economic story?
Well, the my fame in reference to the banana goes back to the time when I was advisor to President Carter on inflation in the late 70s. And, of course, at that time, our overwhelming concern was the fact that prices were rising at double-digit levels. I pointed out that we could not hope to continue to spend at those levels and see prices continue to go up at that rate without sooner or later having somebody say, this is intolerable, we're going to have to apply the one powerful weapon that is available and that can, without question, bring inflation down, and that is a tightening of the money supply and raising of interest rates. And I remember having a specific conversation with Paul Volcker just before he finally slapped on the limits on the growth of the money supply, and he said that our voluntary program, which we had been trying to enforce, that I was unhappily in charge of trying to induce restraint in spending. We did actually make real progress in balancing the federal budget, but to induce the necessary restraint in spending,
because you were really worried about
not working.
Mm-hmm, you were very worried about heading into a recession.
Well, and so sooner or later, I said, if we don't bring it under control by limiting wage settlements, price increases, and spending, government spending generally, then sooner or later, somebody's going to have to stamp on the monetary brakes, and that would induce a real recession. In fact, at a certain point, I said, look, at the rate we've been going up, we probably will have a very severe depression. And, of course, that got everybody very frightened, but it certainly made the point, and it was correct. In fact, the consequence of Paul Volcker's very courageous restriction on the money supply was the deepest depression or recession since the 1930s.
But they told you, you're just not allowed to say the R word as a member of this administration, correct?
Oh, yes, I can imagine how disconcerted people were in the president's the press office, Jody Powell, about hearing that word. And in fact, I got a call from someone in the White House, not the president, saying, Fred, you know, in your present position, people listen to you and they get frightened. So could you avoid using that word? Well, it was a little bit hard since I was in charge of a program that was trying to induce us to slow down the rate of wage increases and price increases and credit extensions. How could I do that if I didn't point out what the price would be if we didn't succeed? So I finally had to use some word other than recession or depression. And the one that sprang to my perverse mind was banana.
Well, I understand that the banana companies eventually took issue, and you said, "Okay, I'll call it a kumquat."
That's exactly right.
What would either of you call yesterday's economic summit, if you will, economic conference display in Waco, Texas? Michael Connell.
Well, it was an interesting. But fairly limited selection of folks talking about the economy, and I don't think I'd be betraying my journalistic sense of fairness or an attempted objectivity to say that you wouldn't call that a full range of opinion about what's going on in the economy right now.
But if one wants the chief executive to reassure the quaking consumer confidence, I guess it isn't quaking too much yet, but you don't want to see it quake. Do you think that President Bush achieved at least the posture that he, as he puts it, has his hand on the wheel of the economy?
Oh, you're asking whether I think he achieved that?
Yes. Did he reassure people that he cares?
Well, I think that's a political question, and I'm not a political reporter. But he made it clear that he wants to be seen as caring, and that's almost as important.
Mm-hmm. Alfred Kahn, what do you come away with as an economist? Were there any economists there yesterday?
Well, I must defer to Michael on following closely developments in the economy. He obviously does that much more competently and thoroughly than I. I'm still living with the consequences of the roles I played in deregulating the airlines and telecommunications.
We were going to talk to you about that later.
yes, we can get back to that. But I think the experience in the President Ford's campaign, you remember the whip inflation now, people were wearing, wearing buttons, and my really futile attempt. It wasn't a total failure because we deregulated trucking in the circumstances, and we deregulated the railroads. I'd be glad to talk about that. But in fact, mere appeals to try to restore confidence without objective actions, I think, are ultimately futile. What's much more important in terms of offering some hope for the economy is what the government can do to make it sensible for people to spend more. If I talk to people as individuals and I look at myself, my advice is be careful. Consumers engaged in a binge of spending in the 90s. They went deeply into debt. And as an individual, it doesn't make sense to, in the interest of the economy at large, to change my behavior. And so I find it almost mysterious that consumers have continued to borrow and to spend and cannot believe that it will continue, particularly as I see indexes of consumer confidence very, very different from 2-3 years ago when people were saving practically nothing. They were spending their capital gains that they either had realized or thought they had earned because of what was happening to security prices. Mm-hmm. As individuals, I don't think it makes sense for them to be urged, oh, keep spending, keep spending.
That really does seem to be the crux of the matter, doesn't it, Michael? I mean, what is good for an individual is somehow not good for the economy at large, spending saving being opposed.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. The president took a little bit of heat and some ribbing after September 11th for painting patriotism as being a matter of going to the mall. Yet, in a certain sense, and I'm one of the ones who contributed to that, I confess, but yet in the fall, it was really important for the economy, for the larger overall economic well-being of the United States and the people who live here, that people continue to transact business and continue to do what they would have done anyway, with the caveat that Professor Kahn mentions, that if you think it's foolish for you individually, maybe you don't want to be participating.
What are people spending, if you pull apart these numbers, we're almost out of time in this hour, spending their money on?
What are they? Well, from the point of view of the economy, the most important element is housing and autos. I should say the two most important elements are housing and autos. Housing has just been a tremendous boom market for the past year, year and a half. And if that had not been the case, I think the economy would be in a deep recession and would have remained so. And auto sales, too, have hit record levels. And they started with record sales right after September 11th, when people were supposed to be too scared to spend.
Okay, we'll dig more into that when we come back. This hour does not have 22 minutes, to paraphrase a Canadian show. It has a whole hour, and we're going to spend it on you, the listeners. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. When we come back, you're listening to The Connection from NPR.
Rumble.
I'm Jackie Lydon. I'm sitting in for Dick Gordon, and you're listening to The Economy Connection. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255. My guests have been Alfred Kahn, who's professor of political economy at Cornell University, and Michael Cannell, who's a national economics reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. And we're going to be joined very shortly by Christopher Carroll, who's an economics professor at Johns Hopkins University. Before we come to another guest, I know that Professor Carroll's standing in the wings. Let's just finish up, Michael Cannell and Alfred Kahn. We talked about the big purchases this past fall as being auto and house purchases. Now, obviously, those are financed by long-term loans. Is that the kind of spending that really sustains a big capitalistic economy like ours? I mean, two-thirds of the economy is the consumers. So it would seem that that would be a favorable thing, would it not, Professor Kahn?
Well, I think clearly, as Michael points out, it has sustained the economy. The effect in the aggregate has been to postpone the recession or modify the recession or perhaps even terminate it. But the lesson of the 70s, to which I'd like to return, partly because I was so badly burned as advisor to President Carter on inflation, the lesson of the 70s is that calls for voluntary behavior that may or may not be in the interest of people individually are in the end futile. That if we're worried about the state of the economy, of a recession aggravating or continuing, the solution has got to be at the macro policy level. It took Paul Volcker. It took the restriction on credit to bring the inflation under control. It took our efforts to bring some balance to the budget and restrict spending to bring it under control. It did not alone, voluntary calls did not prevent the United Automobile Workers from settling for 13% year wage increases at a time when obviously that far exceeded the increase in productivity. Mm-hmm. So in the same way today, reliance upon consumers continuing to behave in this way, I think, is futile. It would be far more important what we Congress finally did to extend unemployment insurance protection.
Okay.
I think some efforts by the government to guarantee retirement income that is now threatened with loss at that level is the only way at the aggregate level of government policy to solve these problems. And I think that also means a repeal of the ridiculous, ridiculous long-term tax cuts that go into effect years from now.
All right.
When that's what we need now.
Okay. Well, you know, almost on the stump. Thank you. And we're going to discuss the tax cuts in just a bit. But I still want to find out more about consumer debt when it comes to credit cards. Michael Cannell, do you have at your fingertips something that tells us about how much in debt we are on our Visas, our MasterCards, our beloved credit cards?
Oh, you're looking for a number. I don't have a number on my fingertips. I can tell you that it has been at or near a record level for most of the last two decades, with the exception of the 90-91 recession. And every time the debt hawks look at it, they say, this can't go on, and yet it seems to go on. But I would say as an amendment to that, that the savings rate virtually doubled, in the last couple of months from something like 2.3% to a little over 4% among individual on the average for individuals. So people are starting to pay off some of those credit cards, and people are perhaps to an extent using their refinancing at low mortgage rates to pay off some of their credit cards at a lower rate. So I think we've probably seen the peak of consumer debt.
Mm-hmm. Christopher Carroll, you're an expert on spending and saving. Doesn't it seem bizarre that the notion that we're paying off some of our credit cards is worrisome? I mean, this is what people have been encouraged to do.
Well, yes, this is actually an old point in economics. Keynes called it the paradox of thrift, that saving was sort of clearly a good thing at the individual level, particularly in uncertain times, but it could be a bad thing in the aggregate, even though it was good for each individual, and hence the term paradox. But it's a real paradox. The economy will be better off if people, on the whole, go out and spend more in the next year or so than it would be if people keep cutting back.
So what would you tell those of us who are a bit credit card happy to do?
Well, it depends on whether I'm advising you about what to do for the good of the economy or for your own good.
Therein lies the rub.
Yes, that's right. For your own good, it might be prudent to be a little cautious about your spending over the next year or so until you've built up a bit of a buffer or enough of a buffer stock of assets to sort of make you comfortable. But, of course, if I were advising you on behalf of President Bush, I would say go out and spend like there's no tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, it's become a political matter, I guess. Let's take a caller. The number to call to get in on the credit card connection and the economic connection is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Nick, hello. You're calling from Orleans, Indiana, yeah?
Yes.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I just had an observation, or I guess in my own life, I have a pretty decent job, but I've got no assurance that I'll have that job even a month from now. So at this point, if I can't pay cash for it, I just don't buy it. I drive a 10-year-old car with over 100,000 miles, and within a year, my mortgage will be paid, and that's the only way I'm going is, you know, day to day. Sure, you go out and buy the necessities, but I'm certainly not using my credit card for anything.
Nick, you are, so yesterday, your Wall Street's worst nightmare. Isn't that true, Christopher Carroll?
It is indeed true. I've done a lot of research on precisely this question of precautionary behavior, precautionary saving, and there is a lot of evidence that when uncertainty goes up, people cut back on their spending, as you would imagine. We've had some offsetting factors in the last year or so that have prevented the worst cutbacks that you might imagine, and in fact, consumers have continued to spend at a moderate pace. But there is certainly reason to suppose that if uncertainty keeps going up, that we might have a bit of a slowdown.
Nick,
and
do
our
you
caller
think
was in, may I just say, our
yes,
caller
please,
was engaging, describing perfectly rational behavior.
Yes.
It is not his responsibility to do things that are foolish for him personally in order to maintain total spending in the economy.
Nick, I just have to ask you if you're part of the team. Do you feel like you are?
Well, certainly. I mean, you know, I would when I need things that I really need, I go out and buy them. But again, I try and spend cash. Part of it may be my demographic, living in a rural area, and also the fact that I'm a little older, approaching retirement. My parents grew up in the Depression, and I was always taught that, you know, if you can't pay for it, you don't need it.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you very, very much for that. Would you say that, let's take another call. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK makes the economics connection. And we're speaking with Laura, who's calling from New Berlin, Wisconsin. Hello, Laura.
Hello. I was just wondering, how are we to necessarily have great faith and belief in the barrage of economic statistics that are continually being released? Could that be yet another giant con akin to the massive fraud we've been witnessing on Wall Street, all designed for some ignoble purpose, I guess, to solidify and boost the power of some unnamed entity?
Well, Michael Cannell, that seems to me to be very much your bailiwick. Your job is to pull apart these statistics, and it seems that Laura has a reasonable question, given the blind faith we've had.
I'd like to, if Laura's still on the line, I wonder what her own, if she could briefly describe what her own situation is, whether she has a job, whether she feels secure.
I do not have a job, but that's by choice. But no, I do not feel secure because I have been relying heavily on interest earnings from insured certificates of deposit because I never had any faith to begin with in Wall Street. And so I was in the minority, but now I, too, am suffering because I always put safety first. And it seems now things have degenerated that those who wanted to play it safe are going to suffer along with everyone else.
Well, I think you hit an interesting disconnect between what we talk about, what we write about all the time, and the things that you should make your own decisions on, because in a sense, you make your long-term decisions based on what the broader economy looks like, but you're not going to make your decisions about whether you need to, a particular, you know, whether you need to buy a new refrigerator or repair the current one based on what the GDP numbers are coming out of Washington or the productivity numbers. You're going to make that decision based on your own personal situation. So the short-term answer is you don't have to pay any attention to the big numbers because your own situation can be vastly different even if all those big numbers are completely accurate.
Mm-hmm. Let me say one other thing on this. The events in the last few months on Wall Street have made a lot of people, I think, skeptical about any numbers that are describing the economy. But it's interesting to note that the numbers from the government on what was happening to corporate profits over the last year were very different from the numbers that were being officially reported on Wall Street. Total profits, according to government statisticians, basically have been stagnant for the last few years, while reported profits of the S&P 500 companies just kept going up and up and up. And I think now there's a good reason to think that a lot of that reported stuff from the companies was accounting tricks. But the government statistics look much more solid.
Professor Kahn, you've been on the inside of looking at an administration's economic policy. Can that those numbers ever be finessed, shall we say, to look better for the buying public and the voting public?
I think you have to distinguish two kinds of numbers. The statistics that are compiled by the government agencies, the figures on unemployment, the figures on prices, savings rates, and the like, are put together by professionals and not by people who have a personal interest in distorting the record. The numbers that have given rise to such justified skepticism are numbers provided by private company executives who were really had a conflict of interest between increasing the value of their own stock options, which meant that to the extent that they could lie or in effect lie or pretend that profits were higher than they really were, they could make out with hundreds of millions and billions of dollars. So I think that your skepticism should not be really directed at the actual statistics compiled by the government. Now, there's an immediate set of statistics put out by government that are politically motivated or can be, and those are the projections of future budget surpluses and future deficits, because there is a strong temptation on the party in power, whichever party it is, to paint what they call rosy scenarios. Those you do have to be skeptical of. But well, I don't think there's any reason to doubt that people who had thought that they had been prudent and saved for the retirement and had retirement benefits, there's no reason to doubt that they are now facing a very sharp deterioration in their prospects.
Right. Well, but to be fair, many of the numbers that we see coming out of D.C., even the ones, especially the ones coming from professionals, revised continually, so that we only just learned that we had three down quarters last year.
Oh, yes.
We thought we'd only had one.
Yes, but that's in some sense a sign of the honesty of the numbers. The fact that they get revised when new information becomes available.
Honesty, but not immediate accuracy.
That's right.
Oh, right.
That's an important right. Distinction to make. I started off out of grad school working at the Fed, where I was one of the chief forecasters for consumption spending. And just to reinforce the point that the government statisticians do a first-rate job in trying to get a handle on the incredibly complex economy. I learned a lot about how those statistics are put together, talked to the people that put them together, and there's no more dedicated or honest group of government employees or private sector employees out there than the people who are putting these things together.
All right, well, let's take we're going to be joined. Thank you very, very much for calling, Laura.
Thank you.
You're welcome. We're going to be joined now by Barry Tatelman, famous in the Boston area as president or CEO, depending on the day of the week, of Jordan's Furniture. Mr. Tatelman, are people buying new mattresses from you so that they can store all that cash that they're pulling out of the market?
Well, I don't know. We don't have pockets in the mattresses. We haven't gotten to that point yet. But people are still buying, and we find it, you know, since September 11th, you know, that a lot of people are cocooning, and they do want to stay home. And if they are going to be home, they want to be comfortable. A mattress is one example of that. A good sofa, you know, they want to feel pride in their house. If they feel like it's not safe to go out, then at least they want to feel good in their own homes.
Do they buy on credit?
Yeah, they buy on credit. I can't give you figures whether credit is higher now than it was pre-September 11th, or that I don't know.
But as someone who runs a big, well, a business that really depends, I think, almost entirely on consumer confidence, you're not selling, you know, truck parts, would you say that from what you see, there's any sign that it will slow down, or do people, you know, evince as much ebullience as they apparently have for some time now?
Well, I mean, I'm not an economist. I'm a retailer. But what I've seen so far is we have not seen a slowdown. Our business is okay. It's not phenomenal, but it's not bad. And we're very sensitive to the weather because we're a retailer. So, I mean, we find that when it's warm weather and beautiful beach days, that we don't do as well as if it rains on a weekend or something like that. But we have not felt that it's the economy that is holding people back at this point, at least as far as goods for their home.
Okay, thank you very much, Barry Tedeman.
Could I ask? Could I jump in and ask Barry a quick question, whether he has any sense at all of how many of the of his customers are people who are buying new houses and are buying more furniture and mattresses to go in those new houses?
Michael Cannell, you took the words out of my mouth. You know, is the difference between the kind of long-term loan that a new house would entail, Barry?
Well, that's hard for me to say. I mean, we ship out probably about 1,200 orders a day, and I don't have those figures. I don't want to just say off the top of my head how many people are new homes versus replacement, and that's a figure I just don't have. So I couldn't tell you.
It's an excellent question, though, because the statistics show that there's a very strong relationship between sort of new home purchases in a given quarter, and then the next few quarters there are a lot of durable goods purchases, including mattresses and things.
Right.
So it probably does reflect, at least in part, the fact that one of the remaining areas of strength has been housing.
All right. Thank you very, very much, everybody. We're listening to The Economics Connection. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. When it comes to the economy, we hope it's the connection, not the disconnection. Join us, The Connection, on NPR.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be. Available on the web at www.macromedia.com.
I'm Jackie Lydon. This is The Connection, and we're talking in this hour about the economy and whether consumer spending can keep it alive, keep it resuscitated, keep us all buoyant. The number to call to get in on the conversation is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Christopher Carroll, you look at consumer spending. What is the difference between, and saving, we hope, what's the difference between saving for a home or a kid's college education and saving for something in the durable goods area, like the sofa that haunted us this whole hour?
Well, from the standpoint of the effect on the economy in the short term, it doesn't matter what you're saving for. It just matters that you're, whether you're saving or not. In the broader context, I guess, you're in the long run likely to be able to do less of or spend less on whatever it is that that you were saving for if the market goes down or things aren't going as well as you had hoped. So that the point there is that when the market goes down, people may find the need to increase their saving at exactly a time when the economy as a whole needs a reduction in saving and an increase in spending.
All right. The consumer spending connection is 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Tony, welcome to the show. You're calling from Buffalo, New York.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I'm interested in hearing comments from your guests on what the relationship might be between consumer spending and the new bankruptcy reform legislation that's likely to pass Congress in September. Without getting into the merits of the legislation, I'm just wondering about the timing, whether, you know, adopting this kind of legislation, making it harder for people to file for bankruptcy at this point when the economy is struggling, could, you know, have a negative impact on consumer spending, the economy, and increase the risk of a double-barrel recession.
Michael Cannell, certainly the way that credit cards have been going with almost 0% interest rate and now this bankruptcy legislation, are we going to get trapped here?
Well, Tony raises an interesting question, because if indeed people look at the legislation, which I think would not take effect until the end of the year, and they say, you know, I'm right on the border of serious financial problems, I'm going to end up filing for bankruptcy, but I don't want to do it under the new law. Well, then you're going to see a spate of spending followed by a spate of bankruptcies, followed by a spate of problems in the banking sector as they try and collect on those bankrupt individuals.
You know, this is something you never hear on those consumer credit makeovers. Go out and spend it now so that when you declare bankruptcy, do it sooner rather than later, because the legislation will be more favorable to you.
Well, this is one of those laws. This is one of those aspects of unintended consequences, I think. That the law may, in fact, I don't know that it will. I don't think anybody knows for sure what would happen, but I think it is a possibility.
Tony, do you worry about getting into a big debt that you're going to have to pay back as you look around?
Not really that much, but it does make me wonder. There's people I know who might be affected by that, and just from what I've heard about the legislation, it might make it more difficult for some consumers to start over and, I guess from the standpoint of impact on the economy, renew their previous levels of spending.
Okay. Thank you very much, Tony. Let's take another call on the Economics Connection. The number to call is 1-800-423-8255. And we're speaking to Mark, who's calling us from Burlington, New Hampshire. Hello, Mark.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thank you.
I wanted to ask a question. I heard someone discussing the fact that consumer confidence is very low and people are not spending money at the rate that they probably should, and what that paradox is. And one of your panelists, I think it was Professor Kahn, mentioned that the government needs to step in or should step in some capacity and perform something that only they can do instead of the feel-good push that they're making out there right now.
Well, I think actually they're spending a great deal. But what about that, Professor Kahn? Do you think that consumer spending will be stimulated by tax cuts?
Of course I do. Not by tax cuts that take effect 5, 6, 7, 8 years from now. Not by tax cuts that go principally to very high-income people, but shortly more immediate tax cuts that the benefits of which are distributed more broadly, clearly they will have a effect of moderating any recession that may be in process or help reverse it. My main point was that responsibility for aggregate spending in the economy cannot be placed on the behavior of individual consumers motivated by trying to do something that's good for the economy, even if it's not good or safe for them. That's the level at which it's the function of the Federal Reserve System, the monetary policy people, and the people who are formulating our tax, federal spending and tax. And if you look at the financial condition of the state governments now, which is catastrophic, and which are cutting back on the most essential kinds of spending, then you realize that somewhere there has to be at the central level an exercise of macro policy to make the economy turn around and improve.
Professor Kahn, you are retired and an economist. You're professor emeritus. How much did you always save? You know, what percentage of your income did you feel it was prudent and necessary to put away?
Well, I've really never paid much attention to it because when I was in government or in the academic regime, I think my last pay when I was dean of the College of Arts and Sciences at Cornell was $35,000 a year. So
it's
I never had to worry
radio
very much
about,
I had never had to worry very much about saving. In the last 10 or 15 years, I've become deeply involved in the deregulation process that I helped initiate, and now I don't have to worry the other way. I'm almost ashamed to admit about how well I'm doing. So I'm not a very good person to talk about it. I had inbred in me from a very early age a respect for saving and a distaste for excessive consumption, which has never left me. And I'm certainly not going to increase my spending above my accustomed rates in order to help the economy. That's crazy.
Christopher Kill, are you optimistic about our economy's buoyancy? And do you think that people really are doing the right thing by spending as they are? Have you gone out and made a major purchase?
Well, I myself have not gone out and made a major purchase recently. I am optimistic for the sort of the medium and longer term. The boom of the late 1990s, while you know some of it was a bit illusory, on the whole has held up pretty well in the revisions of statistics that Michael Cannell was talking about. There was a lot of concern that the boom of the late 1990s would evaporate completely the first time we had a recession. But in fact, the productivity statistics, even after their revision, are still very strong. And that tends to make me think that over the medium to longer run, the economy really is probably in pretty good shape. The critical question at the moment is the short term and whether consumers are going to keep spending. I guess I wouldn't say that I'm either optimistic or pessimistic. The pessimists think we're going to have a second recession, and I don't think that's true. The optimists think that we're going to have a nice back boom like we often have at the end of recessions, and I don't think that either. I think we're likely to have sort of a period of moderate spending growth that maybe still feels a little like a recession, but isn't a real recession.
Is the word anemic the right word to use?
Anemic is a pretty good word to describe it, I think.
Okay, let's take another call. Jane is calling from Westford, Massachusetts. Hello, Jane.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, thanks for joining The Connection.
Thank you very much for taking my call. I have a question. The question is, my understanding of the premise of your program today is that consumer spending will get the economy going. However, when I listen to news reports or news shows and they talk about corporate tax breaks, corporate welfare, the motivation for that is that would allow corporations to create more jobs so that more people would have work, so more people would have money, so more people could spend. How does that mesh with the premise of your program?
Okay. Thank you, Jane. I think what we're saying is that, and I think what has been reported is that it is consumer spending which is keeping the economy going, not going to get it going. Isn't the conventional wisdom, Michael, that really without business investing more, you can't really create more jobs?
Oh, absolutely. I think that virtually no one says that you're going to see a dramatic increase in consumer spending over the next few months. Just about nobody believes in that particular fairy tale. And in fact, looking backwards, they can say that the economy has been kept from going off the rails completely by consumer spending. But consumers are pretty much all spent out. And I think that the recent savings numbers and the debt numbers over the past year or two bear that out. So that if there's going to be real improvement as opposed to that anemic, very slow expansion, it's going to have to come from business investment. I could be wrong about this, but I believe that this is the first recession since World War II that was spurred by the business side and not by consumer spending turning down. So that in this case, consumers have kept right on spending. So it's really up to business to start to see their profits come back and to continue to build on their productivity gains and to start expanding and hiring.
Christopher Carroll, does that sound right to you? And do you think that business, which has been looked at very much as a part of the problem, is going to come down from the mountain and start investing?
Well, Mike is right that the most recent recession is very unusual. The thing that really sparked it was the a huge drop in investment spending that was attendant on the dot-com bubble bursting. And so if you want to get a recovery from the same place that you got the recession, that's where you need to go. If the government wanted to pursue a concrete policy that would try to achieve that, the way to do it would be to have not sort of broad-based corporate income tax cuts, as the Bush administration has proposed, but instead to have a targeted investment tax credit or accelerated depreciation, those sorts of things, which have some prospect of actually achieving the goal of making investment come back.
And Professor Kahn, do you keep it up with the feel-good talk, photo ops, calling recessions bananas and kumquats?
Oh, the hell with the feel-good talk. I think that was that just Chris who...
Yes, that was Chris Carroll.
I mean, I agree completely. The in part, these things are not under our control. We do have waves of investment associated with the building of the railroads in the 19th century, associated with the automobile, associated with the dot-com revolution. And in part, that's not within our control. It certainly doesn't look as though we're going to get the same kind of massive investment in fiber optics that we've had in the last few years. One of the things that was most satisfying about the last recovery was that it was very largely technologically induced and involved increased business spending. To the extent that we don't have that rescuing us, then there's a place to look for government investment in our still decaying schools, for example, in support of research, in technology. There are certainly, our infrastructure is in many ways badly deteriorated. So in part, it's not under our control, but I agree that targeted investment tax credits are one very sensible way of getting – not just giving money away to businesses, but paying them on a kind of COD basis. You deliver investment, and we will give you tax benefits.
Michael Cannell, more blunt talk from Professor Kahn. What do you think is the next number consumers will be looking for? We've just got a little bit of time left, very little.
Well, I think consumers look at the jobless rate numbers and at the new jobs produced, and that's probably what they should be looking at.
All right. Well, thank you all very much. We've been listening to the consumer credit connection, the economy connection, and wondering whether or not consumers can keep the economy going. Very much of a big thanks to my guests, Alfred Kahn, Professor of Political Economy Emeritus at Cornell University, Michael Cannell, National Economics Reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and Christopher Carroll, Professor of Economics at Johns Hopkins University. The Connection is produced by Sean Carberry, Lisa Chow, Sarah Field, Kelly Jones, Allison McAdam, Lindsay Miller, Tara Murphy, Christina Russo, and Doug Shugarts. Our interns are Cara Arsenault, Clint Kavanaugh, and Orit Karitsky-Fox. And Graham Smith is our senior producer. I'm Jackie Lydon, and this week for Dick Gordon, and this is The Connection from National Public Radio.
My wife has a choice card that I got it the other day. I owe $500 just for yesterday. I could see in my mind on a horse like Paul Revere. I hate to check my mailbox, cause these bills keep coming here. Master choice, master choice, a bank of bill card.
Funding for The Connection is made possible by Macromedia, the software company helping to redefine what the web can be.
This is W.